Becoming a lung cancer caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be daunting. So today we're going to get some firsthand advice on how to make it not so overwhelming. I'm Diane Mulligan.
And I'm Mitch Jelniker. Caring for someone strains even the most resilient person. So in this Lung Cancer Foundation of America, Hope with Answers podcast, we hear from the experts on how caregivers can preserve their own health and well-being, as well as the person they're caring for.
Self-care matters. So remember that you can't pour from an empty cup. Remember to take care of yourself and prioritize your own well-being as well while you're caring for your loved one.
I think the key thing is, from my perspective, I think that the caregiver kind of feels helpless, but definitely wants to help.
Lung cancer is a tough topic. It's a disease that affects patients, families, friends, coworkers. But first, it's a disease that affects people.
Advances in lung cancer treatments over the last few years have made it possible to live with lung cancer for years after diagnosis.
The Hope with Answers Living with Lung Cancer podcast brings you stories about people living, truly living with lung cancer, the researchers dedicated to finding new breakthrough treatments, and others who are working to bring hope into the lung cancer experience.
Welcome to another edition of the Hope with Answers podcast. Today's topic is caregiving. Often caregivers think they have to fix the situation. As you're going to learn today, though, sometimes just listening or just simply being there for the other person is enough.
So how can you be the best caregiver? Well, the short answer, it's knowing your limits and knowing when to ask for help. So today we talk to people who have walked the walk, a couple who is dealing with lung cancer, and nurse Jenny Daniel. Well, Jenny, we're so excited to have you today. Tell me, what advice do you have for caregivers?
Yeah, so first of all, let me just tell all caregivers, remember that you do make a huge difference in your loved one's life by doing what you do, right? So your compassion and your dedication is just truly remarkable to be a caregiver. Some key takeaways though, self-care matters. So remember that you can't pour from an empty cup. Remember to take care of yourself and prioritize your own well-being as well while you're caring for your loved one. Communication is key. Communicating, keep the lines of communication open between you, your loved ones, and then other family members or the medical team. Share those responsibilities and decisions together. Make sure you educate yourself about your loved one's condition or disease. It's very important to understand what their specific needs will be as they go through treatment so that you can even provide better, you know, care. Keeping organized is huge. Make sure that you have a central location, whether it be in writing or something where you're connecting with others that are helping with any care online. But just creating some kind of organizational plan for the caregiver and the patient, super helpful. Make sure that you embrace respite time. Again, going back, you know, to the self-care. Take those breaks to recharge, because there's so many times where as a caregiver, you're going to feel very overwhelmed and unsure of, are you doing the right thing? What does my loved one need, et cetera? So just make sure that you're taking care of you at the same time. There's always professional help if that's needed for someone. And I think that's always a good thing, because we don't want a burnout, of course, right, for the caregiver, but we also want to make sure that they are taking care of their, especially the mental well-being, physical well-being, of course, but the mental piece of this whole process and everything that you're willing to do for your loved one, it can take a real toll. So we don't want to forget or minimize the effect that it can have on that caregiver.
Yeah, excellent advice. Yeah, let's amplify on that a little bit, because I know we want to say, hey, caregivers, schedule yourself some downtime. But it's kind of like your mom saying, no, you take care of yourself. It's easy to say.
Yeah.
So how do you prevent burnout? And I should add that, you know, caregiving is also rewarding too, but how do you prevent burnout?
So I mean, again, remember that taking care of yourself is not a luxury. It's a necessity. And it's a necessity for you to be able to effectively care for your person, right? So by prioritizing your own well-being, you are going to provide better care to your loved ones without succumbing to the burnout. So that prevention of burnout is very crucial for a caregiver, so that they can provide effective and sustainable support for their loved one. So I always say a self-care routine for the caregiver. Make sure that you're sleeping and eating well. Make sure that you're taking a break, take a walk during the day, even if it's a 10-minute get out of the house, go walk around the block and come back. And again, I think like seeking out to establish boundaries and seeking the emotional support for the caregiver, whether it's a friend, you know, have a coffee with a friend every week, or as I said before, a therapist or a social worker to kind of connect with to help through those really difficult times and acknowledge that what you're doing is really, really challenging. It's a great thing, but it's still hard. Staying organized is huge, and that will help to prevent some of that burnout too, if you're not scrambling to look for documents or, oh, when was that appointment? Where's that appointment card now? We just want to be organized. It helps to reduce stress and helps you manage the time that you need for your caregiver as, or for your patient as well. Making sure that the caregiver has regular health checkups. The other thing too is like celebrate your achievements. Acknowledge and celebrate the positive aspects of the caregiving journey. It's not always easy, but recognize the difference that you're making and celebrate those little victories.
You know, with caregivers, it is so important to celebrate the little victories and to have the support for yourself, because you're giving that practical support like grocery shopping and making meals. You're giving the medical support of going to all those doctor's appointments, making sure the meds are given on time, those types of things, right. And that really important emotional support. So what should caregivers be mindful of? Because that's a lot of responsibility.
It is. It's a whole lot. And I mean, caregivers, you know, they really do play like this multifaceted role where we're encompassing the practical and the medical and emotional care. But it's essential that, you know, you have the empathy and understanding, you have effective communication skills, you respect your loved ones' need for independence and dignity as well, you know, and communicating with them, find out what their wishes are. Obviously you have to be super patient. You have to be a very compassionate person. This is not for faint of heart, you know, kind of folks that maybe I should do this, maybe I shouldn't, I don't know, I feel obligated. It's none of, you don't want to do it out of a sense of obligation. You want to do it because it's something that you really feel as a caregiver, you're making a difference for your person. We also need to recognize that there's grief and loss in this whole process. And that's difficult, but individuals that face health challenges will definitely experience that grief and loss. So make sure that you acknowledge the emotions and provide a supportive environment, provide a supportive environment, not just for them, but for yourself, so that you're both getting that space to like process, right? Process and talk of these emotions. Being flexible and adaptable, two really key things to kind of think about as you're facing, you know, like the emotional needs. You just have to be adaptable in the approach of what you're doing for this individual and adjusting the evolving emotional landscape for the person that you're caring for.
Yeah, very, very much so. I mean, caregivers should not feel bad that maybe at times things get a little bit more than they can handle. But still, how does a caregiver know if it's too much for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. And it really takes a strong person to look within to say like, am I doing this for the right reasons and not because there is this overwhelming sense of obligation, right? Which is, we see that a lot, especially in spouses. Spouses often don't want to invite someone into the home to say, here, you take care of my loved one who's dealing with this, and I'll just kind of take a back seat. You have to make sure that you're getting a scheduled downtime so that you can basically just relax a little bit and not feel like this is the obligation. So again, I think creating a schedule, right? Knowing a weekly schedule, times where you know that you need breaks, and also obviously the specific time slots for the caregiving tasks, for appointments, for personal activities. But again, setting those really realistic expectations. Acknowledge that you can't do everything. Not one individual in this world can. It's impossible. So setting the realistic expectations for yourself and prioritizing the tasks based on urgency and importance. So even if you sit down at the beginning of every day and say, here's the top three things that we absolutely have to get accomplished today, or we have to be, you know, at X, Y, and Z location. But then what are the other things? You know, what are the other things that are your self-care, your scheduled breaks, and making sure, again, to identify tasks that can be delegated, especially to other family members.
And I'm thinking that it's really important to have the conversation between the caregiver and the patient that there's a reason why I'm doing this and that I want to be my best for you. So I have to have some downtime, and other people are going to help, because I do think many times the patients are like, oh, please, please don't involve anybody else. I mean, I don't want to be a burden. I mean, you hear that all the time, and yet they don't really understand that the burden is really falling on the caregiver. And so the caregiver doing these types of things, it's really important. So is that a good conversation to have? And are there other ones that you think help grease the wheels through all this?
Yeah, I think always keeping a good open communication dialogue going is super important. I mean, if you think about just kind of picturing most of the caregiving is done spouse to spouse, right? Or partner to partner. So we need to make sure that as the caregiver, you recognize the demands that are physically and emotionally there. Nobody should be doing this alone. So again, having that dialogue is you just have to keep it open. And even if that means a 5-minute meeting every morning to say, like, here's what I'm concerned about, here's what I'm concerned about, you know, as the caregiver and the patient, just talk about things and be open. Don't ever be afraid to say it's too much or I'm not comfortable doing X, Y, or Z. I think having that shared responsibility with the caregiver and the patient themselves, that's going to be huge. And knowing that, you know, when your caregiver is supported, also, they're then providing better quality care for their loved ones.
Yeah, open dialogue between the caregiver and the patient will help both of them, for sure.
Absolutely.
So what about conversations? Should there be conversations between the caregiver and the doctors? Because I see the caregiver as a part of that overall team that's trying to help that person.
Yeah, a lot of times what I've seen is that the caregiver is actually mediating most of the conversation between themselves and the medical team, right? So for on behalf of the patient, because a lot of times it's almost like another overwhelming task for a patient to have to do that. But it also, it allows the caregiver to really understand from a medical perspective. And again, it kind of goes back to educate yourself fully or as much as you can. Some of us don't have enough time to really prepare to be a caregiver. But just, I think for a caregiver to recognize that they do have limits and what those limits are, seeking help is not, it's not a sign of weakness. It's a practical, necessary step for anyone to be an effective caregiver. So that conversation, whether it's, you know, a question like, is it okay to have another dose of my Zofran because my nausea is really not getting any better and it's only been 3 hours, not four.
To sum it up, Jenny, I'm hearing that scheduling is incredibly important and making sure that if people come in, they can see that schedule and they understand what to do, that the communication is huge. And sometimes that communication should even be before anything major happens, because it's so important that everybody's on the same team. Tell me what else. What are the other takeaways that you think are just so important that people should really remember out of the discussion that we had today?
I think educating oneself on exactly what's going on with their person is really vital. If you can understand their condition, you will in turn provide better care for them. Practice empathy. When you're thrown into that situation, you look at it very differently, and you may change from this very well-organized, nice legal document, what you want, to what's actually practical and what's maybe the best for the time that the individual needs care, or if it's end of life care, what does that look like? Who do they want involved? Who do they not want involved? Who's going to bring them stress? Who's going to bring them peace? You have to look at so many different avenues for all of these things. And I think with good communication skills, any of us can do it, right? Yes. But we also have to take care of ourselves as the caregivers.
I just wish I'd talked to you before I became a caregiver. That's all I can say, because this was fantastic.
Yeah, it was
really
great.
Challenging. Yeah. I mean, we live personally, but we move both sets of our parents. So I have aging parents times two. And I can tell you, just even as, you know, I'm a nurse, I caregive all the time and I love it, but there's still days where I even sit back and say, hold on, today's my day, or I need my hour to just de-stress. I need to go for a walk. I'm feeling it. It's just human nature. We're not meant to 24/7 take care of someone that we're looking at, especially as a spouse or a partner.
It's a great point, because as you were talking, I was thinking, well, not everyone is naturally a caregiver, but given the advice that you shared, even a new caregiver can be the best caregiver they can possibly be. So thank you for your insight. We appreciate you passing along this very good advice.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our next guests are Frank McKenna and his lovely wife, Debbie.
Now, Frank is living with lung cancer. He's a Lung Cancer Foundation of America Speakers Bureau member, which means he's devoted to advocating for others living with lung cancer. And his wife, Debbie, was for a long time Frank's caregiver, and both offer some very practical advice.
Hi there, Frank and Debbie. And Frank, you're a personal trainer and you're used to being in top physical shape. How difficult was it for you to have to ask Debbie for help on things early on when you were first diagnosed?
Yeah, it was difficult because, you know, as you said, being a personal trainer, and at the time I was teaching and had my personal training business, so I was pretty independent to, you know, to work two different jobs, to train myself, you know, training other clients. And when I was, you know, shocked by my stage 4 lung cancer diagnosis, we didn't know anything about it. And when my first targeted therapy didn't work, that is when, you know, I really, you know, when you go through the shock, you rely on, you know, the person that's with you, your caregiver or your spouse, you know, whoever that close person is with you, to kind of, you know, go through everything with you, the appointments and different things like that. But when my first targeted therapy didn't work and my health, you know, severely was just taking a downturn, that was really tough, because, you know, you relied on them, you know, to get you food, you know, to keep your, you know, to keep you eating, to keep, try to keep the weight on. You were lethargic and had no life. So, you know, I'm sure it was tough to be around somebody who, you know, wasn't that energetic and wasn't doing things, especially when you're used to them being that way. So having to rely on somebody else was tough.
You know, Debbie, being a caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also, of course, be exhausting, both emotionally and physically. What did you do during all this to ensure that you didn't wear yourself out while caregiving?
Well, I don't know how rewarding it is, but it was exhausting, especially emotionally. So, and I just happened to have had a friend go through the same kind of thing like 9 months before Frank was diagnosed. And she told me the way she coped was to keep herself busy. And so she started painting every wall in her house while her husband was going through all this
stuff. So the minute I found out Frank was very sick, I went outside and started painting our pagoda. I mean, I just thought, fine, he went off to work, but I was like, I got to start painting. This is going to be stressful.
It's a great point. I mean, and I think I was a caregiver. I painted the inside of my house too. I think that's fascinating, but that's what you said.
Yeah.
And you know what I realized? It was when you're done painting, whatever you're painting, there's a sense of accomplishment and a sense of control that you get back that you've lost through all of this. And so I'm also interested, you said you worked out, but what else would you tell other caregivers about the importance of self-care and even scheduling those times when you went out and worked out so that you knew you had some place to go? How important is that? And how important is self-care?
It's very important. It's extremely important. At first, I didn't think I needed any self-care. I was just going to take care of Frank and my kids and my cat. And I also had to take care of my mother, who was two blocks away with dementia. I had to take care of her, and she was still in her house. So I was split like 1,000 different ways. But I can tell anyone that's gone through any kind of stressful thing that at least if you could get out and take a walk, you know, put your earbuds in and just go take a walk and just try to de-stress for a little bit, even a half hour, is so much better for you, because then you have to go back into that stressful situation again. And it's going to continue for a while, but you can't. I was trying to control everything around me. I was trying to control how he felt, you know, and taking care of everybody else. And I wasn't going to think about how I felt. But after a while, you just can't keep it in anymore. You have to do something to relieve the stress. So even if it's just a half hour walk.
And that might be important, whatever their hobby is, don't give them up. You know, don't say, well, I can't do this for me because I have to give to them. You have to still do those things that you enjoy, or else you won't be good enough to help the person that really needs the help. You got to take care of that person first. So whatever that hobby, whatever that interest is, keep doing it or pursue it. You're not taking away from the other person. You're making yourself stronger so you can help that person that needs your help.
So very important to make time for yourselves. But I'm also curious about taking time to just celebrate life. And I ask that because when you get a lung cancer diagnosis, there's a lot to process. Naturally, everybody's focus is drawn to the person who they need to care for and what's best for their loved one. The experts say, hey, stop and smell the roses a little bit. Of course, when you're in the middle of it, that sounds, you know, it's easier said than done. How important is it to actually pause and just capture those memories of everyday life? How did you do it?
Well, I think we mostly did it because you have to work around doctor appointments and all that. And at first he wasn't feeling good, which is what a lot of people go through. But we like to take day trips, and we're lucky enough to live close to, for example, the Eastern Shore. We used to take day trip up to Delaware, you know, and go to the boardwalk and stuff, and down to Nag's Head, which is our favorite spot to go. And we'd drive down there and do a little drive around and then have lunch and then just drive home. And that was our day out to relax. We even have a picture of us at one of the restaurants where we like to go after you were just finally feeling good enough to eat out, like he didn't even have an appetite. And so there's a picture of us where, you know, like one of these selfies that, you know, that we have, and that always reminds us that we were trying to go out and do something, even though we were, you know, at a bad point right there. So it's real important to, you don't have to go on an extreme vacation, but just to take a day trip, I think is good.
Absolutely. And to schedule all that. I mean, one of the things we talked to Nurse Jenny about is the fact that you're now dealing with tons of medical appointments, scheduling that on your own time, but you're also working more on meals and trying to figure out how you're going to work the housework in. And if you have a job, how you're going to do that. And if there's children, how are you going to handle that? How important is a schedule and keeping track of all the different activities in a way that can be much more manageable?
I don't think we had a schedule. We just already had a routine. With taking care of my mom, that was a routine. So that part was down. Our kids were older, so they were taking care of themselves, more or less.
We just had our daily routine. Like, even through all of this, I still kept teaching and I still kept my gym. So I was still doing two jobs, even though I didn't work out myself. And I didn't train more than two people back to back because I was physically exhausted and couldn't, you know, had to lay down in between before I could, you know, even drive home in my car. So it was exhausting, but it was like, this is life. This is what we do. You get up and you go to, you know, you go to school and you teach, and then you go to your gym and you train clients, and you just try to make it through the day. You're exhausted, but it's not like, well, let's make time for this and this. I think we were just so used to, or I've always been used to, you know, having the two jobs and always being on the go, that it just seemed like I need to keep doing that because I need to keep doing that for me. Once I start giving in and say, I can't, you know, do this, or I can't train these people, or I can't like be who I am, then I kind of thought I'm losing. I'm like giving into this.
Definitely writing things down on the calendar. If you're a person that needs to see things up front, which I do, you know, I don't have to schedule when I'm going to see my mother, more or less, you know, but I had to schedule like, oh, you know, give the cat his pills, or, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's the way I kind of kept control of things, is that calendar. I still have the calendar, but I hardly write on it now.
That's interesting. That's fascinating, but it really helped you during that time. That's great to know, because I think it's easy to forget things, isn't it, when you have so many plates that are spinning all at once, and you really had three full-time jobs at that point.
And I still keep the calendars, because I have to look back on them, you know, especially when my mom was in different care, I'd look back, oh, when did I make that doctor appointment? I didn't even use my phone. Forget the technology. I just look back on the calendar and, you know, could see everything. So I had like 2 or 3 years sitting on my counter just so that I could look back and know what went on. It's helpful. Yeah. Write it down.
Keep it organized helps.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I want to learn from your successes and maybe your missteps along the way. If I called you this afternoon and said, okay, I'm going to be a caregiver, what do I do? What advice would you have for me?
Top thing would be to ask the person, well, what are the things that you feel like you have to do for the person that you're going to be taking care of? You know, just so I kind of got a mindset as to what was going to be going on. And then, you know, we talk about that a little bit. And then I'd probably say, well, you know, what do you do in your time? And like when this person's taking a nap, maybe you perhaps could go do something for yourself. You know, keep busy, but also don't forget to eat right. You know, I was so worried when I had my blood test done for my yearly physical. I thought for sure I was going to be numbers all over the place, because the only thing I remember drinking a lot was margaritas on the deck while I was painting, because I had to de-stress at night, you know. Well, apparently the doctor told me your numbers are fantastic. That must have been the trick. So I don't know.
Question for you. Did you have any challenges, the two of you, with Debbie? You're watching Frank, and Frank's the kind of guy, I'm guessing, who probably does more than he's supposed to. Is going to continue working, even though he's got this very serious diagnosis and the clinical trial's not going well. But yet at the same time, you want to respect the fact that he's continuing to push so hard. Was that an issue for you to balance that?
That was exactly. I just told him, I said, I'll answer this one. Because I remember as he started to feel better and do more for himself, I still continue to want to hover, you know, and do you need a pillow while you're laying down? Do you want your blanket? You know, let me fix you some more pudding cups, you know, all that stuff. And he got irritated with me at one point and kept saying, didn't remember? You're like, I can do it myself, you know, and he was getting better. And I'm like, I know, but I've been taking care of you for so long. I said, I have to make sure you're still doing things right. So I remember that as being an issue when you were trying not to get mad at me, but I know you were irritated.
Yeah. And I remember during that time, that's when Debbie said, you know, it was like around November, December, when I was diagnosed back in 2016. And she said, you need to get rid of the gym. You need to sell the gym because you can't do both. You're killing yourself. You can't, you know, and our thought at that time when the targeted therapy wasn't working was I had very little time left. And, you know, you never know, but it wasn't like, oh, you've got, you know, months left or years left. It was like, do you have a month left? You know, do you have a few weeks left? And she said, you have to get rid of the gym because you can't keep doing both. And that's when I started to feel better when I did my second targeted therapy, and that one started to work and I started to feel better. And that's when I said, okay, I'm ready. I'm going to retire from teaching. I'm keeping the gym, but I'll give one up, but it's not going to be the gym. It's going to be from teaching.
Yeah. Well, you talked it through. That's the important part. Exactly. I mean, so talk about communication, of course, key in any relationship, but this is a whole nother burden of care that you're putting on your marriage. How important was it talking through this process with each other?
I'd say it was important. It wasn't easy at first. In fact, he didn't even tell me he was stage four when we left the doctor's office, and I didn't want to ask. So I didn't know for a while, because in my head, I didn't really want to know anything because it was too much. And I overheard him telling a friend that it was stage four, and that hit me like a brick, you know. So we weren't really talking about it because we just couldn't at the time. But then we did. I mean, then it was like, okay, we know what's going on. We met with the doctor and we didn't have any issues, I don't think. I don't remember.
No, I remember, you know, I was shocked when they told me it was lung cancer. First of all, I thought it was bronchitis or pneumonia or something like that. So I went into the appointment by myself, but Debbie went with me because we were going out to lunch after the appointment. And when I came out, I remember then, you know, I just came out in the waiting room and she was sitting there and I says, all right, let's go. And we got out in the car and that's when she said, well, what is it? And that's when I said, it's lung cancer. When we meet with the oncologist, she explained everything. She goes, I knew nothing. We knew nothing about lung cancer or therapies. And she, we had just the scans and she, you know, noted all the places where it was. And yes, this is stage four. And we have a plan. We're going to try a targeted therapy. We're going to have it analyzed for biomarkers to see what biomarker you have, because we don't go straight to chemo. We go to find out what the biomarker is, and there could be a targeted therapy or immunotherapy that would match up with that. So that was kind of, you know, giving us that information, and then we could talk with each other about it.
I think that glimpse into how that came about and some of the challenges is tremendously helpful to people that are listening to this podcast. So thank you guys so much. Your sharing, I think, will make a lot of other people's lives a lot easier.
Well, that's good to know. Good. I mean, it's not an easy thing to go through and everybody's experience is different. Mm-hmm. So
I think the key thing is, I, from my perspective, I think that the caregiver kind of feels helpless, but definitely wants to help. And it's like, what, how do I help? And from my perspective, like we would go to scans and Debbie would always go with me and I would have to go in, you know, the separate room and go into the scan for 25, 30 minutes and she'd sit in another room. But knowing she was sitting out there, that she went with me, was doing this with me, to me gave me a sense of a kind of comfort that, you know, she's with me in this, she's out there. And although she's sitting out there and can't do anything about the scan and is just worrying what's going to show up on this scan, that part is tough where you're separated. But just that knowing somebody's with you in this, they're going to your appointments and listening to things that you miss when they talk about it, or they're going to your scans just to drive you there and back or ride with you there and back, that you have that support. And I think they want to feel, what can I do? What can I do? And sometimes just being there and just being with that person is enough that person, you know, feels that comfort that they need to get through another day.
Excellent point. Well, thank you both. We appreciate your insight.
All right. Thank you.
What struck me most about these conversations is that there's really no perfect way for somebody to be a caregiver. But what's really important is that the two people are talking it out to figure out what works best for both of them.
Absolutely. And as we heard all three guests say, caregivers must take time for themselves. That is key. Well, if you're enjoying the Hope with Answers Living with Lung Cancer podcasts, consider donating to help LCFA produce this resource. Remember, this podcast is a resource for patients or really anyone else seeking answers, seeking hope and access to updated treatment information, scientific investigation, and information about clinical trials.
Make sure to subscribe to the Hope with Answers Living with Lung Cancer podcast. You'll be notified every time a new episode is available, So visit us online at lcfamerica.org, where you can find more information about the latest in lung cancer research, new treatments, and more. You can also join the conversation with LCFA on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.